You're listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, your escape to reality.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Today is Friday, January 1st, 2010, and this is your host, Stephen Novella. Joining me this week are Bob Novella.
Hey, everybody.
Rebecca Watson.
Hello, everyone.
Jay Novella.
Hola.
Mike LaSalle.
Hey, everyone.
And Evan Bernstein.
Hey, everyone.
Who's that Mike guy? What?
Mike is joining us for our year-end wrap-up episode, which has become now customary.
Oh, thanks.
So welcome, Mike. Evan, you're going to give us a This Day in Skepticism?
Absolutely, because it was 1975 when Kenneth Bruger discovered the long-unknown winter destination of the monarch butterfly in the mountains of Mexico. It was a mystery for a long time.
Yeah.
I guess they had no idea where the heck the monarch butterflies, all 20 million of these butterflies, would fly off to.
How'd he do it? Did he follow them?
Using tags on the wings of some of the butterflies. He followed their migration trails to Mexican territories, and he studied it for, well, it was 38 years of data.
And also last night was a blue moon.
Yes.
That's right.
And a lunar eclipse, a partial lunar eclipse.
Yes. Not
from my vantage point, not from you.
Yeah, really? In Europe, not
I
in
know.
The U.S.
Europe gets, I know.
So it doesn't
this
really
hemisphere
count.
Gets cut out of a whole bunch
all the
of
best stuff's over here, guys. I'm telling you.
Did you see it?
I did see it. I saw the tail end of it as I was stumbling down the street toward the next party.
Now, the moon, though, did not turn the color blue.
No,
as the name would suggest,
only means that it's the second moon in a month.
Second full moon, in a month, yeah.
Second
and
full moon.
That happens on New Year's Eve, but once every 19 years. Next one will be in 2029.
Is that when Apophis is going to hit the Earth?
It's around then, yeah, so we might not even see it. We'll all be dead.
It's not going to hit. Refine that, Bob. There's much less chance that asteroid's going to
come
anywhere.
Yeah, not in 2029 anywhere.
Yeah, right.
Just did you guys see the news of the Russians, though?
Yeah. They're going to launch.
They're going to blow it out of the sky.
They're going to launch something.
Good for them.
On that asteroid.
Nice.
I'm a little, shall we
better
say,
they blow
skeptical. Because I read some interview with the spokesperson, and he said that the asteroid was going to come around in something like 2026 or 27. It seems very vague and... I'm just thinking you should really have all your facts straight.
Yeah, you got to be kind of precise on that point.
Yeah, isn't it possible that they could do something to it and actually jockey it into a worse position?
That was my thought, too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They could knock it into one of the keyholes. They absolutely can.
They need to hire Bruce Willis for the job.
So this is the episode where we reminisce about the best moments over the last year.
And decade.
And also we're going to talk about some...
The millennium?
Best and worst of science and skepticism in the last decade. But first, let's go through our listener feedback as to their most outstanding SGU moments of 2009. There were a few votes for best episode. I think the one that got the most votes, though, was Rebecca's Wedding.
Yay. Oh.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was my favorite, I think.
Yeah. Well, that was a hopefully once-in-a-lifetime event. So.
I think the second one was the Nexus 2009 with Richard Wiseman as a guest. So
that was so much fun.
Yeah, he was awesome on the show.
Two live events got the most votes.
We did more live events this year than any previous year because we did those. We did Dragon Con. Well, I guess that's it, but that's still a lot. Three.
Tam, Dragon Con.
And much more.
We'll be doing all that plus Australia this year.
Yeah, we'll have even more live events in 2010. That's true.
Soon we'll get to the point where we're just doing a live show every week. That'd be fun.
The live events are just
exhausting.
Are great. I mean, it's being there. The immediate feedback from the audience is, well, just something we don't typically don't experience, and it's always great.
They're, it's good. Honestly, it's good for a once-in-a-while thing. The downside to the live events are that they're technically challenging and often a little bit out of our control. We're at the mercy of whatever venue we're at.
Yeah.
And, you know, we also don't control the questions. So while live questions are great, we can't use them to set ourselves up to talk about topics we want to talk about, you know, and they tend
That's
to be
true.
Live questions tend to be a little repetitive. So again, it's good every now and then, but it's obviously not going to become a regular thing.
But there's the hanging out with you guys thing. That's fun.
We love it.
That goes without saying. Yes.
It's definitely a lot more fun for me as a panelist to see you guys and to have the face-to-face interaction and, know,
definitely, yeah.
Crazier stuff happens at the live events, like Bob coming out in a costume.
Yeah, that was Rebecca getting married.
Right.
We had a lot of great guests in 2009. We always, I think, do a good job of pulling in some interesting interviews. Those that got the most votes, one was Michael Vassar. If you remember him, he's the Singularity guy. A lot of people just said, that Singularity guy. Didn't remember his name. Because it was just a very, not only an interesting interview, but it was a little contentious, and I think that people liked that. The next one was Rusty Schweikart.
Yeah.
If you remember the Apollo astronaut.
That was great.
That was I think, my most surprising interview of the year. Phil Plait hooked us up with Rusty, and it's one that I didn't see coming until Phil said, hey, I can get you this guy. And it turned out to be a really interesting interview. I mean, just talking with him about his firsthand experience of going up in Apollo was fascinating.
Yeah, that rocket story, this is something you never, ever read about, never hear about, just those subtle little things that only someone really on the rocket would experience and know. And it was just fascinating stuff.
Yeah, that we had one emailer said that he's been like a real Apollo fan for years and thought he knew everything there was to know about that launch, and yet he still learned new tidbits from Rusty on that interview.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, there was a couple of things that he said, like how much the rocket compresses during liftoff, and when they turn those boosters off and the whole rocket snaps back to its original size, right, which I think he said was a few inches that it crunched down, and it lurched them forward, and his head almost hit the freaking control panel.
Yeah, because they loosened their straps. Oops. They shouldn't ought to have done that.
It's hard to plan, expect that in the simulation.
Yeah, that it brings up that point that here you have, a multi-million-dollar program. How many engineers and just really bright people involved in thinking through every little tiny little detail, and yet you can't anticipate things like the astronauts loosening their shoulder straps so they can move around a little bit more and then almost cracking their head opens on the control panel. I mean, they couldn't anticipate that. There's no substitute for experience is the bottom line.
Yeah, and just talking to someone who actually went through that, I mean, not only is the guy an icon in history, but I mean, he did it. He was there. He strapped himself into that thing and did that,
right.
that unbelievable, awesome science thing that as when I was a kid and I read about it and saw videos about it, like that got me interested in science.
Any other interviews stand out in your guys' minds?
I think Tim Minchin got a number of votes on the year-end wrap-up thread, and for good reason. Tim is always incredibly entertaining and
absolutely
such a wonderful performer. So he's a lot of fun to interview.
Michio Kaku was awesome.
That was a great get. Yeah,
Michio Kaku got a lot of
really interesting
feedback.
Stuff.
Ken Miller, it was a great interview as well. He got a lot of votes.
Yeah.
Noted to be, Ken Miller is an evolutionary biologist who deals a lot with creationism and just, again, one of the most knowledgeable and thoughtful people, I think, on that topic. And Mark Krislop got a lot of mention as well. He's a recurring guest on our show, did the H1N1 special with us, and also has his own podcast, Quackcast. So he has a lot of experience behind the microphone. Yeah, and Mark is always fun to talk with.
Award-winning podcast.
Yeah, and his show is fantastic. I mean, I always learn something when I listen to his show. Actually, I learn a lot. He pile drives detail into his show like crazy. But man, his sense of humor just gets me. Like the whole time I'm listening to him, I'm half laughing.
The interviewing Brian Brushwood was great as well, because who knew that later that year we'd be eating fire with him?
That's right.
On the campus of Yale.
There may be a video appearing on YouTube sometime soon of us eating fire with Brian Brushwood.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Well, there were many great interviews this year, but those are the ones that got specifically mentioned by our listeners. The next category was the SGU's funniest moment for 2009. So before I start listing what our listeners said, do you guys have any that stick out in your mind?
I mean, there's some funny conversation between Rebecca and Steve about birds early on in the year.
Could you be more specific?
I know. It was about bird jizz or something like
you
that.
You mean when we were talking about bird jizz?
You know, that time you were talking about birds? That's that time.
I do remember discussing jizz.
A lot of people liked when we were talking about vomix and pischetti and mimatos.
Mimatos.
Some people like Rebecca's line. Rebecca's good for the one-liners. She said, "I can't believe the chronic doesn't cure the chronic."
I was pretty proud of that one, too, actually.
The Cluckosaurus Rex discussion was good.
Yeah, that was good, Ev.
Yeah, that was good.
The best science news story of the year. This is an interesting one. What do you guys think?
The few that I liked, one of them was Ardipithecus rambidus. That was a tour de force of research and work that these scientists did over many years to put it all together before they submitted it, which is what they did this year, which is basically an earlier stage of human evolution. It's older than Lucy. So that was a tour de force, I think. That was very interesting. The biggest surprise for me was the whole magnetic monopoles that they supposedly
found. The monopoles,
found.
Yeah.
I remember when, Evan, you told me that we were down in at DragonCon, you mentioned it. And I'm
that's
like,
right.
What? No way. I just like refused to believe it until I read about it. So that was when we were
all at the hibachi place.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was a big
one
for me.
That was definitely the most surprising headline I saw.
Yeah.
You know, magnetic monopole.
I was like, what?
Me?
Just a bare positive or, I mean, north or south? What are you talking about? But yeah, it looks like they did. I haven't read much more about it, but I think they're still going with that interpretation. Mm-hmm. And then water on the moon, that was big story. God, how many news items were made of that? That was really a really cool thing that was finally proven.
Yeah, it's nice that there's water there. If we ever do set up a base, it'll certainly make it a lot more feasible to have some raw material there that's very useful. Bob, what's really interesting, I mean, the Ardipithecus got a lot of votes, you know, a lot of magazine's top 10 lists. The one I didn't see was Ida, or Darwinius Macella.
Yeah. I was going to bring that up on worst science.
Yeah,
news.
That was the biggest. The science was fine, but the media flap was a flop. I mean, it was terrible.
Media flop.
This was the scientists. They tried to be media savvy, and they did like a documentary and a website and a book, and the hype that they put behind it about it's basically a primate fossil. The specimen is lovely. I mean, it's a very well preserved specimen, and it is from a period of time potentially connecting two branches of primates, one leading to prosimians like lemurs and the other leading to, you know, monkeys, apes, and, you know, the group that also includes humans. But they tried to make it seem like this had special significance for humans, and it didn't. It was really, no one really bought that. It just seemed odd. And they also were making really ridiculous statements like, this is going to hit the scientific community like an asteroid. You know, and they oversold it so much that it was just wah, wah, nothing. Yeah. You know, and now at the end of the year, nobody even remembers it. So I mean, it's not even making anybody's list.
I forgot about it. If you didn't mention it, I wouldn't.
Yeah,
have
total
of it.
Fail. It was a total science media fail.
Failure.
And remember some of those articles written about it were really bad.
Yeah. Oh. This is terrible. I definitely like the water on the moon, Bob, but I would have to add to that methane on Mars. That's still in contention. That could be from life. You know, sounds like they've ruled out meteors. There's no geological process that we know of that could explain it. So it's something unknown, or maybe it's little Martian critters. You know, making.
Yeah. Bottom line is, if that's bacteria producing it, that's the biggest news story of the century.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could be.
Maybe
millennium,
next year.
In my opinion,
life on another planet. I mean, that forget it. It's
non-Earth life. That's huge. Huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
That would win.
You know, it was the year of H1N1 too. Mm-hmm. There was so much going on with flu and you know, swine flu, and you know, so much press on it.
It's
kind of passed us by right now, but you know, if you remember the summer months,
was big.
Really, every other headline was about H1N1.
Yeah, I mean, and the flu is still chugging along. I mean, we're still right in the midst of it. There's a lot of scaremongering about the vaccine. It made Discover's number one science story of 2009 was the fearmongering surrounding vaccines. And they got the story right, so good for them.
Yeah.
And here we are, you know, several months into the vaccination program, and nothing. Like, there's like no extra cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome. There's no really nothing rising above background level for any side effects. So it's turned out, thank goodness, to be completely safe.
So you're saying the media hyped it? What?
It wasn't so much. It was definitely partly the media, but the anti-vaccination movement really went full bore. And also just a lot of alternative medicine groups. And anyone who has a beef with science-based medicine or vaccines in particular used the H1N1 swine flu vaccine as a scare tactic. And nothing. You know, it turned out that it was, as we predicted, it's a safe vaccine. It's known technology. We'll monitor it closely, but we don't expect any surprises. And it turned out to be totally fine.
Yep.
I also think we should mention this was the 40th anniversary of the Apollo 11 landings on the moon.
Oh, good point.
And one of the coolest things to come out of that was, it's not actually not directly tied to the anniversary, but one of the coolest Apollo-related stories was the LRO taking pictures of the lunar landing sites, the Apollo landing sites, including like the footpaths of the astronauts shuffling through the regolith.
Mm.
Part of the greater conspiracy.
Yeah. there were a lot of great photos that came out this year, especially more wonderful photos of Cassini. The things that Carolyn Porco always shows in her talks. I think we talked about some of the pictures that.
And we have to mention the Large Hadron Collider went online this year.
Mm-hmm. Back online, yes.
But it actually started online. Smashing stuff.
And it did break records. It's
like
now it's now the most the most energetic.
It is the most energetic collider in the world. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely not an insignificant thing happening. I mean, that right. is the most expensive and complicated machine that humans have ever built, right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And number of black holes created by the Large Hadron Collider?
Zero.
So far.
And Steve, you said it was the 40th anniversary of the Apollo moon landings. It was also the 40th anniversary of the internet.
Oh, is that right?
In 2009, yes.
Uh-huh.
The first four-node network was made by ARPA, ARPANET, is what it was called back then in December of 1969.
Which is related to the LHC, actually. I mean, it's the same people.
Right.
Isn't it?
CERN, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Some other ones that got mentioned was Crocoduck.
Crocoduck was a good one.
Quacksnap.
The Quacksnap, yep. The holographic
Quacksnap.
Universe.
That's still totally freaky.
They like that one, huh?
Yeah.
That was freaky.
Yeah, it's essentially like our universe is, you can make an analogy between the way our universe is structured and a hologram, meaning that it's just there's a graininess to our universe, which is due to the fact that it's really a picture on this, it's like as if it were the picture on the surface of a sphere. I guess it's on the surface of a four-dimensional sphere. So it's kind of like a hologram.
Yeah,
it's hard to do it justice without spending another 20 minutes talking about it. But go back and listen to that episode.
Yeah, that's
basically,
it.
Basically, we're
it
all
in a
living
nutshell.
Inside a snow globe.
Right.
Oh, no. Ah, they're shaking it again. Ah! Hey, we're talking about 40th anniversary stuff. Other numbers or years of significance that occurred. 150 years, Origin of Species.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
200 years, Darwin's birthday.
Yeah.
400 years, Galileo's telescope.
Very nice.
So,
I'll throw another one in there. 50-year anniversary of physicist Richard Feynman's very famous lecture. There's plenty of room at the bottom that he gave at the American Physical Society at Caltech, where he basically laid out the potential of nanotechnology, essentially. Really laid it out there, as far as I could tell, for the very first time. Anniversary of note, I think.
Let's go now to the other side, the flip side, the most outrageous illogical statement or pseudoscientific claim of the year. A lot of people voted for the YouTube video on how homeopathy works. Do you guys remember that one?
That was awesome.
That totally incomprehensible nonsense about trying to explain homeopathy. It was really just amazing. The thing that always gets me is that you could take mass out of E equals MC squared because there's not that much mass in the universe, so you just eliminate it from the equation.
Yeah, that would
be for effort.
It was one. Wow. It's one of those things where it's delivered by someone who says something like that and then smiles and nods, and then everybody in the audience just smiles and nods. Yeah, of course you can do that. Yeah.
Well, we didn't actually see the audience in the YouTube video.
You know, Steve,
you can imagine what the audience is doing, but it's irrelevant. The thing is, it was just trying to make sense.
It's the assumed authority by the person who's speaking such complete and utter BS.
Right, yeah. Right. She projects that she should be having some authority. And she she spoke like a teacher talking to five-year-olds, too.
Right.
Which made it all the more, you know, entertaining, you know, as a skeptic.
A teacher who mispronounced people's names.
Yes.
Hawking's.
We it's wonderful when homeopaths or, you know, pseudoscientists do a better job than we can of making their belief system seem ridiculous. I mean, we don't have to really do anything else to point to that.
I think one of my favorite news stories that, you know, maybe it's true, maybe it's not pseudoscience, but the LHC reaching back in time to stop itself from happening.
Yeah, right.
I loved that story.
Yeah, that was fun.
It's like, really?
Oh, God.
There's nothing you could say
to
that.
We still don't know if those scientists, you know, we don't know if they were actually doing it as a thought experiment or if they were serious, right?
Well, I think they were serious, absolutely.
Well, I think that was definitely the most bizarre thing to come out of, like, a serious science paper.
Steve, can we go over some of the best Xbox 360?
Yes, let's do this.
Yeah, let's do that. Oh, wait. I have a quote for you. I want to see if you know who said this in 2009. They took this beautiful man and they basically put poison into him. Why couldn't they have built him up nutritionally and gotten rid of the toxins in his body?
Yeah.
We have an epidemic going on, and I have to say.
Suzanne Somers. About Patrick Swayze.
Yes, about Patrick Swayze.
Oh, God.
Defiling the memory of Patrick Swayze.
Most outrageous statement, Steve eats babies.
Steve, the anti-vaccine movement deserves a big, you know, mention. Now, they get my vote. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but they're the skeptical jackass of the year collectively. And that certainly is part of why. But go back to the science stories, the one that got a mention from, like, ridiculous claims was when the study came out showing that essentially fake acupuncture was no different than quote-unquote real acupuncture, and the scientists concluded that therefore fake acupuncture must work too. Let's just turn the entire premise of scientific medicine on its head just for this one study.
Okay, when you just said that, Steve, I had about a 3-second rage fire through me, you know? Like, I just need to do something violent about that right now.
I'm so glad I'm not in the same room with you.
Let's talk about something good. How about they found water on the moon?
It's true. They did. But don't forget
fantastic.
Quantum jumping.
Quantum
that was a good
jumping. That was a great one.
That was good.
We went on a long rant about going to different dimensions, right?
To learn skills from other versions of yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
Rebecca, you said something about how you could pay for it by mugging yourself.
Which you know you would do.
Another item that got some votes was that the claim that Thomas Jefferson was a creationist before The Origin of the Species was published.
Oh, right.
Before evolutionary theory was presented. Yeah. that's meaningful. Well, let's move on to the jackass of the year. We already mentioned the anti-vaccinationists. J.B. Handley, I think, has to stand in for that crew. I think he was the person who was most pushing that forward this year. And, you know, the baby-eating picture, it was just the most disgusting thing that they did. But just their increasing efforts to work tirelessly against, you know, against vaccines as a science-based, you know, health care intervention. And just the tactics they use are absolutely horrendous. So they get my vote. They get my vote. I agree with Discover Magazine.
I think I would throw in with the BCA, the British Chiropractic Association, you know, since I'm representing from jolly old England. If any listeners have been asleep for the past year, they're the people who are suing Simon Singh for libel.
Right.
For saying that their treatments are bogus. Which they are. So I suppose I'll be sued now, too. Anyway, douchebags, jackasses.
I kind of see Suzanne Somers and Jenny McCarthy just kind of hovering around each other.
Yeah.
You got to throw Oprah in there, I think, to that coven.
Yeah,
although
I think Oprah really won last year. I don't know that she's kind of been coasting this year. Did she really do anything new? I mean, she did give Jenny McCarthy her own show.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
And she's retiring to only rise up in a douchier way later, I'm sure.
Right.
but
not her media empire.
Right.
If you're going to mention Suzanne Somers, I think we have to also give honorable mention to other cancer quacks. Gonzalez, whose treatment for pancreatic cancer this year was shown to be much worse than standard therapy. In fact, it was as bad, if not worse, than no treatment at all. And yet he continues to push it. And Huldah Clark, who finally died this year.
Huldah.
It's an in memoriam.
Yep, definitely.
And how about the guy who treated the H1N1 cheerleader?
Oh, yes. But that gets all wrapped Desiree Jennings. It gets wrapped up in the anti-vax stuff. That was the other really nasty thing this year, the exploitation of that poor girl, Desiree Jennings. And that was Batar.
It was the
guy who treated her with chelation therapy. Totally disgusting.
Mm-hmm. That was bad.
What about the Pope?
For
his comments on condoms and AIDS and his recent rant about women.
Everything. This is one of the worst popes in, long time.
He's a pretty bad pope.
Worst pope of the year.
Palpatine.
We need more popes.
I'm going to throw an honorable mention to Charlie Sheen. Who led the raves of the 9/11 deniers this year.
Yeah, but it was the death throes of the 9/11 denial, I mean, the truther movement, right?
The death rattle.
I mean, yeah, they're pretty much done.
He gets the honorable mention also because he was arrested for allegedly wielding a knife against his girlfriend. So what we have here is a knife-wielding 9/11 denier.
Allegedly
and I think when you put that combination together, that is by definition, a menace to society, and therefore it deserves mention.
Evan, you're just poisoning the well with the whole knife wielding.
No, it needs to be said.
I said allegedly.
It needs to be said, though. It happened. It's in the
news. True. It's true.
All right. What about Bill Maher?
Yeah.
He's big news, but only... the funny thing, though... Okay, so he was a jackass, yes, because of his denying any form of science-based medicine. But it's not through anything that he did specifically this year. It's only because of what that foundation did to give him a prize for it. And I think they're the jackasses.
Giving Maher the Richard Dawkins Award.
Yes.
Yeah, they definitely did.
I think they're the jackasses for promoting such an anti-science jackass.
And they took a lot of heat for that.
Yeah, I agree with Rebecca.
Yeah, but as long as he's an atheist...
Even though he's not, and has specifically said, I'm not an atheist.
Yeah.
I mean, they've pretty much failed on every level there.
Well, the final category that we put to our listeners was the skeptic of the year. And the person who got the most votes was Phil Plait. And we brought Phil on to chat with us for a few minutes about that and to let him know that he won. But before we go to that interview, let's go through the honorable mentions. Other people who were also mentioned by our listeners as Skeptic of the Year. Richard Wiseman got mentioned, as did Richard Dawkins and PZ.
Simon Singh
for...
I can't help. I always say that when I say his name. I love that. It's like a superhero name. Simon Singh.
He has some kind of fire-based superpower.
Of course.
Simon Singh. That's actually pretty good.
Well, it's not water-based, Steve.
That's why homeopathy. I can imagine there's a homeopathy villain.
He fights homeopathy with his fire
him with water.
He's also known in smaller circles as the evaporator.
Very small circles.
And Amy Wallace of Wired magazine was mentioned as well for her article on the anti-vaccine movement. Always nice to get good, solid mainstream journalism. You know.
Yeah, she was
getting
fantastic.
The science right.
Although I think that I probably gave it to Simon last year too, but I think I would have gone with him again this year because
Nothing wrong with that.
He's just so boldly leading the fight against the chiropractors as well as the entire British libel law problem. I mean, it's really impressive.
Good. He definitely
suffered
props.
The most arrows. And...
Mm.
Yeah. And some mentioned the crew over at Science Based Medicine.
Yeah.
So I have to mention my colleagues over there. Who are, trust me, they're working hard with forming the Institute for Science and Medicine this year. They're now doing double time service, running Science Based Medicine and now ISM. They've been incredibly hardworking this year. So let's bring Phil Plait on to chat about a few things. Phil, welcome to the Skeptic's Guide.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, Phil.
It's always a pleasure to have you on, and we just wanted to chat you for our year-end wrap-up show. Now, we have done a very informal survey of our listeners through the forums. So it was, you know, a somewhat self-selective sample of our listeners. And we asked them to vote for a number of things, including the Skeptic of the Year. And guess who got the most votes?
Jenny McCarthy.
She was very close.
Meryl Dorey. Who else is
actually? Jenny McCarthy was in the running for Jackass of the Year.
Really?
That's right.
She got plenty of votes.
But yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's starting to become a favorite. But Phil Plait, number one vote for Skeptic of the Year.
You're
from
kidding?
Our listeners.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
What were they thinking?
Yeah, really?
was this before or after I announced I was leaving the JREF?
It was in the last couple of weeks. So. And also, you got a lot of votes for favorite interview of the year, but you know, you had more opportunities than most
other people. Yeah, that's not fair.
I think somebody calculated.
Been on more than Rebecca has recently.
Yeah. Wow. Somebody calculated you've been on 5.1% of our episodes.
Is that by time or by word usage meant or by Star Trek reference?
By Stardate.
Yeah, Star Trek reference. I think it'd be much higher than that. Yeah. So congratulations. There's no trophy or anything. It's just...
Well, I'd like to thank all the little people.
You get to come on our show and chat with us.
I mean, that's
verbal confetti.
Yay. That's really very cool. I'm surprised and grateful and you know, insert cliche here. That's really cool.
Well, seriously, you know, you are, you know, one of the workhorses of the skeptical movement. You're ubiquitous, right? I mean, you do a lot of things. And
well, that just goes to show you how disorganized and sad the skeptic movement is. I mean, you know, I'm not even wearing pants right now. And so I think, well, I'm wearing sweatpants. I guess that counts, but
sort of.
Just means that we have to have more professionals getting involved. That's you know, that's why DJ Growthy is going to be running the JREF now. He's actually a little bit more professional than I am.
And he has a tailor.
True. His beard is far more neatly trimmed than mine is.
But you know, Phil, it's really true. Like, you're amazingly accessible. When I listen back to the shows and whenever we have you on, I mean, I think we all laugh a lot more. There's a lot more energy when we talk to you because you know you push it up a notch.
And people I can hear that in your voice. So, no, seriously, that's it's terrific. That's really wonderful. Now, if all those people would actually buy my book. That would be even better.
Let's not get crazy. So, Death from the Skies, is that out in paperback yet?
Yeah. It's got the creepy comic book cover and everything.
Phil actually had a version of it printed on one big toilet paper roll, so you could just slowly, you know, read it when you're in a job.
Just read it one page at a time. That'd be great.
That's where I read it anyway. So I mean,
that's actually a good idea, guys.
Yeah, toilet paper books.
I'm just thinking this through.
Like you have to read far enough ahead, depending on how much you need to use.
In fact, if you're going to write a murder mystery where the mystery is resolved on the last page, that's a great way to make sure people don't go to the last page and read it first. Because you can't really get to it without making a huge mess.
Yeah. Right. That is a good idea, because I think your friends would buy it and your enemies.
That's right.
Because your enemies would just really get into it.
And they'd have to buy it in a 9-pack, so it would really you'd really boost sales that way, too.
Yeah, but it's super absorbent. So
you'd see a wall of your books at Target.
But then the thing is, you couldn't share a bathroom with somebody because then you would miss the segments when they were using it.
In fact, this
isn't hers toilet paper.
This would prevent piracy.
That is true.
Nobody's going to steal it, and it's your own personal download. Thank you.
Oh, God. Zero all night, guys.
I love toilet humor.
And you can hear everybody on the SU forums changing their vote right now.
Click, 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 click.
So, Phil, what are your plans for next year?
You know, blogging. secret stuff I can't talk about yet.
Just more of the same plus the secret stuff you can't talk about.
Well, less of some things. But more, I mean, it'll be writing the blog. I've got some other writing things I'd like to do. I've been tossing around some ideas for a long time, and it just depends on how much time I have. I just wrote a couple of articles for the print version of Discover Magazine. They have they come out with a special issue every few months. This one's called Extreme Universe, and they asked me to write short blurbs about my favorite bad and good science and science fiction movies. So that's available on newsstands everywhere, so you could pick that up. But I'd like to do more for that. I've been wanting to write for the print version of the magazine for a long time. So we finally got around to doing that, testing that out. I really enjoy writing. I haven't gotten tired of it yet, which surprises me because I get tired of almost everything after a short period of time. But I'm still really enjoying sitting down and just talking about this stuff. So I'm hoping to do more.
Phil, let me put you on the spot and ask you a couple quick questions.
Okay.
Biggest astronomy news item of 2009?
Water on the moon.
Okay. What about methane on Mars?
Close second.
The methane on Mars is still too much of a mystery and not well understood.
Okay, fair
for
enough.
It's big news, it's very interesting, but we don't know how big it is, as opposed to water on the moon, which actually is extremely interesting.
Yeah, we know exactly what the utility of that is.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Phil, biggest astronomy news item of the decade?
Ooh.
Oh, I don't know. That's too hard.
Okay.
Now, we had basically kind of sort of direct evidence for dark matter in the bullet cluster observations.
Yeah. Yeah.
This cluster, the two different clusters of galaxies slammed into each other, and you can measure directly where the gas is. You expect in a head-on collision between two clusters, the gas in the clusters would slam into each other and stop dead, like two cars on the highway moving it up, head-on at 60 miles an hour, they kind of stop. The stars pass through each other, the gas stops, but the dark matter theoretically should just keep going. And when you measure the effects of dark matter through its gravity, that's exactly what they found.
Right.
So it's a statistical observation in that you can't point and say that's where the dark matter is kind of sorta. It's more like it's like predicting how many times you're gonna flip a coin heads if you flip it 100 times. It's about 50. And so you kind of statistically can say the same thing about dark matter. Where do you expect to see it? By measuring its effects on the light coming from background galaxies, which gets affected as it passes through the dark matter. And when you do that, you say, oh, look, the dark matter's moved on. And so you can just clearly see that the dark matter exists. And if that makes no sense, I'm actually waving my hands. If you could see me, the hand waving makes it all very clear. But look up bullet cluster on the web and you'll find things about that.
Phil, one more question, because we're talking about the big winners and losers over the last decade in terms of not who's right or wrong, but who has advanced their agenda. And I'll just get your opinion about one thing, moon hoaxers. Do you think the last decade was good for them or bad for them?
Well, 2001 is when the Fox TV show came out, the conspiracy theory, did we land on the moon? and so that was a huge boost for them. There have been, it's been mentioned in a couple of movies and it's kind of gotten into the popular culture. However, I think most people understand that the real promulgators of this conspiracy theory are lunatics. And so on the other hand, they've gained a lot of ground with kids who are young and don't know how to parse a logical argument very well.
Do you think the Mythbusters special on the moon hoax took a chunk out of them?
I have no idea. It's so hard to measure these sorts of things. If you measure it by number of YouTube commenters, which is, of course, the gold standard of how things work, certainly there are a lot of these guys out there. There are a couple of them out there that call me names that always crack me up. It probably infuriates them that I ignore them, so that makes me happy. I think they're probably gaining ground in younger kids, but that's the kind of thing that people tend to grow out of. So I really don't think 5 years from now, somebody who's 12 years old and thinks the Apollo landings are fake, when they're 17, I think they're going to look back at that and think, oh, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There you go.
Well, Phil, it's always awesome to have you on the show.
Ah, it's been great. Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year. Looking forward to another banner year of skepticism.
Yay. Definitely.
Phil, you're awesome.
True. No, you guys are, and I'm pointing right at the little avatars of you on Skype right now. So there you go.
Thanks,
Avatar.
Thank you for seeing that movie.
Oh God, no!
Avatar.
Don't make me talk about that.
All right, good night, Phil.
See you next year, Phil.
Good night, Phil.
See you, Phil. Talk to you later.
Well, I thought we would turn from 2009 to the last decade and talk about. What I'm going to do is I'm going to throw out to you guys. some big topics that skeptics deal with. And then we're going to chat about whether or not we thought over the last decade they were winners or losers.
Okay.
So for give you an easy one to start out with, for example, so the whole creationism intelligent design movement, what kind of a decade did they have?
Oh, they lost so hard.
Big time. Dover, which one
Dover.
Word?
Dover.
Dover was a huge, huge epic fail on their part.
I mean, they didn't destroy them. You can't destroy these unsinkable ducks. But, I mean, that Dover case was, a nice, nice victory for science and skepticism.
Sorry. And speaking of that, just to reach slightly back to the skeptic of the year, I think Eugenie Scott deserves a mention for continuing that fight in Texas this year with the Texas State Board of Ed fight to include, to keep science, in the textbooks.
Yeah. Well, she's on the short list for a skeptic of the decade, even though we didn't ask for that category. I definitely think she's someone who's, over the last 10 years, has consistently fought for science in that arena. And she's gotten, definitely this year, though, we should mention, she was given a couple of really significant awards to recognitions of her work. She was honored by the California Academy of Sciences in October, and she won the Gould Prize by Scientific American. So,
well, wow, that should have gone to so many people.
The Stephen Jay Gould Prize. Yep. So, yeah, so she definitely definitely deserves mention. What about, so yeah, I agree that in general, the creationism, intelligent design movement, they're intellectually bankrupt. They're really desperately flailing around for a strategy. They got hit hard at Dover. Their new strategy in the last decade has been the academic freedom angle.
Yeah.
Which
expelled.
I don't think expelled was a failure.
I think so too.
Yeah, and it doesn't have that much legs, but they did make some mischief in Texas, if you recall, this past year.
Yeah.
With the textbook, so that with the science textbook standards.
Kansas, Georgia, it's been every year or two, it's a new state. They move around, they test different waters, but thankfully they continue to largely fail.
I don't know if I totally agree with you guys. I mean, I think just the fact that they were even considered and what they were basically trying to do, I mean, they caused a lot of trouble.
But in every major battle, they have lost.
But if we think about it this way, where were they 10 years ago and where are they now? Have they really advanced their cause? I don't think they have. I think they've basically lost the last decade. Not that you're right, Jay. We need vigilance. They're causing mischief. They are continually. They have resources, and they're looking for new strategies all the time. But I don't think they've advanced their cause. Certainly, the science has relentlessly gone against them. They haven't really come up with anything new or interesting to say.
What about that creation museum in Kentucky?
Yeah, I mean,
they came up with that.
It's a laughing stock. I mean, they're doing a good job catering to their core, which is easy. You know, that doesn't advance your movement. They're just now stroking their core. That's basically all they're doing. Yep.
Let's ask Kent Hovind if he thinks the decade was a good one or a bad one.
Kent Hovind, also known as 655321.
655321. Okay, what about ufology?
I think they didn't make hardly any ground. I put them in the loser category for this past 10 years.
Yeah, me too.
First off, digital technology really hurt them because everybody's got a camera these days, and still it's the same old crappy video and images. There's no real in your face, holy crap, look at that type of thing, which is what you would expect with so many camcorders and cameras all over the place. And Steve, you made a good point in your blog about it, that then didn't come up with any new twist this decade. The kidnappings or the abductions.
Yeah, previous decades have added alien abductions or alien implants or something. There was really nothing new that I could think of.
Yeah.
A new twist on the mythology. They didn't really advance the mythology at all.
Well, and to build on Bob's point about digital technology hurting them, I think it also hurts them in another way. Not just that, there's a lack of evidence, considering that everybody's walking around with a camera, but also everyone's walking around with a camera, and they actually are taking photos and things of odd phenomena.
Smoke rings.
The mysterious swirls over over Russia or whatever it was.
Norway.
Yeah.
Norway spirals, yeah.
Right. So a lot of people got that on film, and so people were able to look at it and examine it and then explain it, you know, missiles and whatnot. So, I mean, I think it hurts them too, because it's right. easier than ever to investigate yeah. these things.
And another wrinkle on that is the how the appreciation, I think, of how easy it is to fake any of that. Mm. You know, people look at mm-hmm. it and their first thought has got to be, all right, now that could have been faked using whatever Photoshop or other digital technology to really make it look convincing, but still be very fake.
Now, what's funny, the half a dozen or so times I've blogged about this issue and say, essentially, there's no smoking gun evidence of alien spacecraft. There's no good videos, no good photographs.
Yeah.
Invariably, somebody shows up in the comments and says, no good videos. You're just not looking hard enough. Look at this. And right. they link to some total crappy video. It's just happened today where
just
I linked
today.
To a video of this blurry blob dangling from a string. I mean, really? We have a different definition of compelling evidence.
But look at this. This yeah. is the best we have.
Or that video of the alien in the window.
Oh my God, remember that? In the window.
That was this year. We need to mention that as well. And that guy now is pushing forward this the proposal to get
the committee,
Denver,
yeah.
Yeah, to spend money on a committee for alien relations.
In Denver, oh, what a waste.
All right, next topic, ESP research.
Mm. Nowhere. Ooh. They got nothing.
I think they got to put them in the loser column, too, this year, because essentially they get no new paradigm of research, and they've basically admitted that, yeah, the results are not reproducible, and we have nothing. You know, that's like the big conclusion, you know, of all the right. research that's been done. They really don't have anything.
All margin of error within the noise levels.
Yeah.
That's where all the
came up with
takes place.
The notion of the decline effect. The decline effect means that the better the research you do, the effect size declines until it disappears.
Hey, welcome to science.
They're trying
science?
To say another
science.
They're trying to say this is a feature of ESP.
Oh my God!
Yeah. Rather than a feature of the research.
So its right? non-existence is a feature. Nice.
Yes, its inability to
it's
document.
It's not a bug. It's a feature.
Are you kidding me? Like, they're basically saying the harder you look and the less proof you find, the harder you look, that's proof.
That's
yeah, that's part of
yeah.
That's just like saying Bigfoot could become invisible and travel interdimensionally. It's just like saying fake acupuncture works too.
Your skeptical energy is disrupting the thing. So
wait a second. I see a pattern there.
Wow.
It's all post hoc rationalization as to why the science isn't validating your pseudoscience. All right. Bigfoot and cryptozoology.
Oh, come on.
Oh, God.
They're nowhere.
The biggest thing that happened in Bigfoot was a frozen rubber suit. There you go.
A frozen rubber suit.
Yeah, that made them all look completely ridiculous.
As if they didn't
already.
Fired from his job.
What made it cool was that the suit was from one of my favorite Halloween
costumers.
Websites.
Yeah.
Merchandise websites. Horror Dome.
Forget that.
The Horror Dome's a great website.
When Bob first saw the costume on Frozen, he calls me up and he goes, I know what company made that, and it's awesome.
It's a high-end Bigfoot yeah, costume, absolutely.
Who made the pig guts that they poured all over the costume in the styrofoam?
That
container?
Was real stuff. They used some real roadkill,
didn't
they?
There was possum DNA in there. Yeah. Nobody thinks about the poor little possum.
Yeah.
Headline reads, Bigfoot related to possum.
This was
DNA,
also the decade.
DNA concludes.
This was the decade that the surgeon's photo was revealed as a hoax in a deathbed confession.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Of the Loch Ness Monster, the famous Loch Ness Monster, you know, photo, also called the surgeon's photo,
and also with the Bigfoot footage, the famous Patterson.
Oh, the Patterson film, yeah.
Someone took that and overlapped the frame so that they steadied the camera to make it look like it was obviously a person walking.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Right. And we also have to mention on the other side that skeptical scientists investigating this area, Joe Nickel in particular, have made some advances. I mean, they figured out that a lot of sea monster sightings were probably schools of otters swimming in formation.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right. Excellent.
Yeah.
Good one, Joe.
All right. Next category, New Ageism.
Ooh.
So now that's kind of a... You know, open category. That
I think it's
a lot of
I think it's doing fantastic. It's getting into our healthcare.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. If you include alt-med in New Age, then I would say they're winning, yeah. Or they're better off now than they were 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they're winning, even if you set aside alternative medicine as a separate issue. And if you look, there was a recent, we'll probably discuss this in more detail in a future episode, but there was a recent Pew Forum survey looking at a number of belief systems. One was, have you ever had a religious or mystical experience? And that was skyrocketing from 1962 at 22% saying yes to 2009, 48% saying wow. Yes, more than double. And the last decade's a very steep incline up.
Blame the counterculture.
So, yeah. Well, so it seems to just the general sense of mysticism and spirituality and new agey type of beliefs, I think, we're advancing their cause in the last decade in a number of ways. Yeah, alt-med only being one of them.
You know what else went on the rise, I think, in this decade? I don't know if it's on your list, Steve, you were going to bring it up, but ghosts.
That's the next one on my list, Evan.
Yeah.
Ghost hunting, and I agree, and I think that the success of ghost hunting as a belief system is entirely due to reality TV.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So many TV shows out there.
I got a list. Ghost Hunters, Paranormal State, Ghost Adventures, Most Haunted, not to mention Medium and Ghost Whisperer.
And the G-Hunters. Don't forget that.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I've only seen one episode, though.
But I think this is transitory, though. I think these aren't going to last that – because how many times have I seen a preview where all – this is – their main evidence for the week is somebody saying, did you hear that? Or something touched me, and that's it.
I don't know. Are people still watching those? Like, is there anyone out there that's still watching that going,
They do. I overhear talk in my office. We got 40, 50 people in the office, and at least three or four of them on any given week. You know, they weekly tune into these shows.
But
and
what
have
do they say about
them.
It, Evan? What is there to say? Did you see that guy really scare himself?
Right.
That's what they should be saying. But no, they have no clue.
Did you see that anomalous infrared image?
It is. It's adults who like to scare themselves. That's all it is.
They need to find another hobby.
Yeah, try masturbation.
Why, Steve? They're getting rich off of that hobby.
I'm talking about the viewers.
Right. Never mind.
They're not getting rich. No, you're right. For them, it was, unbelievable. But I agree. This is going to run its cycle, and it'll go away. What about just the paranormal in general?
The paranormal in general. I
belief
think
in the paranormal.
I'd give it an increase.
I'm going to call this one even.
Yeah, I think I'm with Rebecca. I think it's even.
All right, I'll throw another one out there. Scientology.
Oh, definitely down.
Oh yeah,
yeah. They're down, way on down, the way.
I don't agree. Yeah. I don't agree.
The numbers, Jay. Their numbers are on the way.
Their numbers are dropping more and more mainstream. St. Petersburg Times runs a weekly Scientology watch now. Anonymous. I mean, like all of their skeletons have been dragged out of the closet at this point, and they're
France
a total
is all
joke.
Illegalized.
Yeah. Jay, I got two words for you, man. Couch incident. You know, when Tom Cruise jumped on that couch on Oprah, and that's all true. The other stuff that he said, he made Scientology an absolute joke. And did you guys know? I didn't realize this that there was a common expression called jumping the couch, kind of like when a TV show jumps the shark. Used to describe someone going off the deep end in public. Jumping the couch. How awesome is that? I think he hurt Scientology more than anything did, because he's so high profile. He was their number one guy, and everyone thought he went from being the top box office sensation really in the world, one of the biggest guys, to being a joke. Like, this guy is crazy and he's a joke, and something's wrong with him.
Don't forget the South Park episode.
Yes.
Which
the thing about
Scientology, like any cult,
right,
is that it trades on secrecy. It advances itself by not letting people know what they really believe until you're deep on the inside. Once that information gets out, once people realize that Scientology is all about this guy Xenu and, alien spirits, it loses a lot of their ability to advance itself. So I think that that's hurt them. And those are the kind of things that once the genie's out of the bottle, it's out. So I think they've had some permanent harm done to them in the last decade. But speaking of South Park, those guys have to get mentioned as one of the real forces of skeptical goodness over the last decade.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Without a doubt.
Even though they might not want to put themselves into that
They don't like labels.
Group, no.
They don't like labels. Because they want to go after everybody equally.
Yeah, everyone's fair game to them. Right.
What about, we mentioned alternative medicine already, so let's talk about that just by itself.
Yeah, well, I think that's...
They're winning this decade.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Infiltrated big time.
Mostly with the anti-vax stuff, but also, I think, homeopathy. Well,
academia, it's from just the story Steve has told, it's getting downright scary. Yeah. What they're doing at universities, it's like, wow. It's
they
really
certainly have
bad.
Made ground in the last 10 years. However, I think that they are...
Peaking?
They're peaking, and in the last decade, I think that they were cashing in on a lot of the ideological advances they made in the 1990s. The real shift was in the 1990s, where fraud became alternative. That's where that shift occurred, and now they're just running with that. While they continue to gain ground with that, I think also in the last 10 years, now the counter movement is really organizing, and there's now I think a scientific backlash forming against alternative medicine. And again, the way you take the wind out of the sails of movements like this is to expose it for what it really is. This is not about providing alternatives or integrating new ideas or anything. This is just about selling fraudulent healthcare with a new flashy label. That's all it is. And once we sort of make that point and really drive it home, I think the whole appeal of alternative medicine goes away. So that is hopefully we're starting to turn the corner there. We'll have this chat again in 10 more years, and we'll see how that goes. But that's what it seems to me.
Hope you're right, man.
But anti-vaxxers won this last decade. Flat out. They went from nowhere 10 years ago to being a major movement with causing a lot of mischief. All the numbers went in their direction.
And death.
Vaccine compliance.
Good point, Bob. There's a direct correlation there.
Yeah, no, vaccine compliance is down, and vaccine-preventable diseases are coming back. And they are well-funded, well-organized. They have now celebrities on their roster. They hugely advanced their cause in the last 10 years. But again, I think there's a cycle to these things. There's the backlash is happening, and we are starting to get mainstream media who see them for what they are. And
we have frontline skeptics like Richard Saunders and Dr. Rachey, out in Australia, where they have it bad over there, and they're doing a lot of good. And
they're doing a lot of good work. There's a lot of organizations doing a lot of good work. Paul Offit has been sort of the tireless guy on the front lines, taking a lot of personal heat. For tirelessly fighting against the anti-vaxxers, so he gets props for that.
And also, Steve, we're seeing the outbreaks of mumps and measles and things that we thought were gone for good. How long can the anti-vaxxers really last in the face of that? Because imagine I think it's going to get worse in the next few years. It's going to get worse.
Yeah.
At some point, people are going to be like, whoa, wait a second. Look what's going on. Some people are going to realize the correlation here. Isn't that going to really burst their bubble at some point? I mean, I hope
that's what some people think, that when the vaccine-preventable diseases really start to come back, that will start to turn the tide against the anti-vax movement. We're trying to do it before it gets to that point.
Yeah, it's just too bad but it has to get to that point.
Yeah, like the safety valve, that eventually it'll get to that point. But I also want to point out that the anti-vaxxers have advanced their cause in the last 10 years, despite the fact that the scientific evidence has gone completely against them. 10 years ago, there really wasn't much published about thimerosal. Now, 10 years later, we pretty much know it's not associated with autism. I mean, there have been more than a dozen solid studies showing that there's no correlation.
I know, but Steve, the fear-mongering gives them the win. I mean, you can always pull people in with fear.
It's true temporarily. I think at long run, the scientific evidence works in your advantage.
Although it might not hurt if we, campaigned with big protests with signs that show exactly what someone looks like when they are stricken with polio.
Or dying from measles.
You want to know how good the vaccinations have worked? I don't even know what measles and mumps are.
And that's the problem, I think, is that a lot of people think of them like, it's like the chicken pox. You have it when you're a kid, you get over it, it's fine. They don't realize exactly how debilitating these diseases can be. And
that's part of the problem,
Okay, next topic. Ready for this one?
Yeah.
Ready.
global warming advocates and dissidents.
Oh, can we just skip it?
Who won the last decade?
I refuse.
Who won the last decade?
It.
Who's making more ground? Is it the global warming advocates or global warming dissidents?
Advocates.
I think advocates only because they're talking about it. But I think it's a close call because the opposition has been so vehement and like disturbingly so. And both sides are so politicized, and there's horrible people on both sides. I mean, it's
but look at the way corporations and governments are moving. Though the vector is towards solutions, you know, for global warming. So I think in that sense that they're winning out.
I think I'm going to call this one a tie.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the global warming advocates certainly have been successful in setting the agenda. And in talking about solutions to the perceived problem of anthropogenic global warming dissidents have been very successful in promoting the idea that there isn't a consensus on global warming, that the science is controversial, the science itself, that there's a conspiracy. You know, even if you the very recent episode of ClimateGate. You know, they use episodes like that to cast a significant amount of doubt on the notion that there is anthropogenic global warming. So both sides, I think, have advanced their opinions, and they're pretty much going head to head in the public arena. I don't know that I could give a clear victory to either side.
I think we're all going to lose. That's my pessimistic prediction.
I think science is going to solve this problem.
I
one way or the other.
Agree. I think that while this debate rages, the science will steadily advance and will solve the problem for us.
Yep.
I disagree.
I have total faith in it.
Not that I would say that I have faith that science will give us a utopia no matter what we do, but I do think that these problems are solvable. They're solvable by incremental scientific advance.
I don't disagree with that. What makes me disagree in general with the idea that it will win the day is not that I don't think that scientists can't come up with these solutions. It's that the politicians and the corporations will implement them. But,
I'll continue to disagree with you for this reason. I agree with you that we can't count on politicians to do the right thing, nor can we count on corporations to be selfless. I think the kind of technological advances that are going to improve the situation are ones that are win-wins, ones that are advantageous to corporations and to people. When you can save money and also lower your carbon footprint, you'll do it. So when those things come online, people will do it. People will get light bulbs that use there's that question.
I mean, by that point, the third world countries could be wiped out by drought. So I mean, it's kind of a
tough call. A question that is a tough call. Extrapolating into the future in terms of I think long term that we will fix this problem. Also, we can't, even though it may be too late in terms of how much CO2 we've already pumped into the atmosphere, but it's possible we can come up with solutions even not just talking about putting less CO2 into the atmosphere going forward,
removing it.
Yeah, dealing with the CO2 that's already there. I think we'll be fine, is my opinion, but no one can predict the future.
I hope you're right.
Except for psychics.
So, final category is the skeptical movement. Where are we now compared to 10 years ago?
Oh, I would say that...
God bless the internet.
Well, look at what's taken place over the past 10 years. I mean, first of all, the podcasting universe took off and so did skeptical podcasts, and we have a lot of people getting a lot of very good podcast programming. I think it's fantastic that we can reach people in this way, and that we have the now, this whole medium didn't exist before.
Yeah.
Also, look at how TAM has evolved over the past, we're up to TAM 8 is coming up. So over the past 7 years, we've all heard the story about how what the attendance was like at TAM early on and versus today, and the demographic has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And also just, blogging in general, I think, is a good way to gauge how well skepticism is doing. And I think we have larger numbers now today much, much larger numbers today than we did 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah, definite winner in the last decade.
And in terms of battles won, I mean, if you look back over all the things we just went over, I mean, most of those are losing. And I think that's because of the response from skeptics and scientists. Mm-hmm. I think that it's an overall win in terms of more people getting involved, not just through the podcast and the blogs, as Jay said, those are very important, but it's encouraging grassroots activism of a sort,
yeah.
Getting people really involved and making a difference.
Absolutely. If you think about the previous decade, there was a lawsuit, a libel suit by Uri Geller against James Randi and then PsyCop. Without getting into all the hoary details, the bottom line was that even though the libel suit itself failed, it was successful in intimidating the skeptical movement and keeping the skeptical movement more fractured than it otherwise would have been. It was a very successful lawsuit from the point of view of bullying and intimidation, even though it failed legally. You fast forward to this year, we talked about Simon Singh, and the response is very different. Rather than libel suits against prominent skeptics fracturing the movement and hurting us, we rallied behind Simon Singh. It strengthened us, and it completely backlashed against the BCA. And the difference there is that now we are much better networked and organized because of the internet and because we're a bigger, more vibrant group. We definitely are younger. We have more energy. And we definitely have our mojo. I think the last decade, this is an easy call, was a huge, big win for the skeptical movement.
So
I pulled out two emails that I got over the last year that stuck out. So I'm going to read them very quickly. And you guys, I don't know if you have any that you wanted to quickly read.
Dear skeptics, you suck.
As typical, we get a lot of feedback. We appreciate the feedback that we get from our listeners. We read every email, even though I regret the fact that we don't have time to answer every email. I promise you, we do read every single one. And it's still like 95% positive, I think, and 5% negative. Almost all the negative emails we got this year was over our coverage of ClimateGate, actually, just because that's such a politically contentious issue.
Yes, and we look forward to deleting your angry emails about tonight's episode.
In 2010, we'll be talking about abortion.
or we might save them for next year.
But we do love the positive feedback just because it helps us know that we're having an impact, and that's important to keep us motivated to spend all the time and effort that we do in putting out this podcast. So thanks to everyone who took the time to write us. But I do want to read a couple that stuck out to me. Here's the first one. For some reason, I don't have the name of the person who sent this in, but they wrote, "Hey, I'm a completely new listener to your program. My doctor actually prescribed a new drug for my anxiety and noticed that I had my iPhone with me at the consultation. From there, he told me that it would be a good idea to sign up to your podcast. He also stated, and I quote, 'These guys say that it's your escape to reality.' I was really impressed that, one, I wasn't lectured by my doctor to get therapy, and two, my doctor related to me and gave me useful information in an attempt to find a way to make sense of the horrible bullshit that I had consistently feed into. This bullshit is fed to me by the mainstream media. I would like to express my thanks for your podcast in helping me make the first steps in overcoming my anxiety. However, I still am dealing with my acknowledged mental condition. I understand it will never be cured."
A doctor prescribed us.
Yes, to you. We were prescribed as therapy for anxiety.
Escape to reality.
Do not operate heavy machinery while listening to
this. Are we a controlled substance?
Will we have to be regulated by the FDA?
Actually, John Ronson told me that he listens to us while he falls asleep every night. And I said, should I take that as a compliment? Or and he's like, no, it's just very soothing. Makes me fall asleep.
Oh my God.
So yes, do not listen while operating heavy machinery.
Could you imagine, like, that conversation took place somewhere? Like, two people were like, you know, I think you really need to start listening. Really?
Well, that was certainly an unusual email. The second one is along a similar line. This is from Kira Neal from Melbourne, Australia, and she writes, "I am almost 13 and this year my dad has been playing your podcast in the car. I have loved the show as much as he has, complaining when I miss something and not wanting to stop when we have to wait for the next one. I just wanted to tell you guys that thanks to your podcast, my 7th grade science marks have improved amazingly. Oh, just this year, I have gone from 72% in my first test to 96% in the last, wow, all because of listening to the podcast. Also, the 5x5 episodes have helped me understand so much. Rebecca, you are my idol, and I hope to be like you when I grow up.
Oh, my God.
Aww.
Yours sincerely, Kira, the budding skeptic.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
That makes me feel like I have a lot more awesomeness to do this year to keep up with that.
That's right. So not only can you prescribe the SGU for anxiety, we'll also get you 24% better grades in science class.
Can we get that put on little Starburst stickers right, that we can put on the website? Guaranteed to.
Well, we were called one of the 15 podcasts that made you smarter.
That's true.
And also, health listens to us, which guys are old and sad and don't know. But it's awesome.
I know that. I know that. Although they think that you're not funny.
They think they did not say me
insulted our humor.
They said all of us in general are not funny. So
really, that's not what I recall. So, but, you know, memories are so
few flawed. Health, but also you're awesome. I love you.
I love you. Go to hell.
Like the moon.
Can I read one of my favorite emails?
Yes, go ahead.
It just came the other day. It's from. It's from a listener named Jim who writes.
Oh yes.
The interview about the LHC was unfortunately what one would expect from a high school student trying to get by without research. Circulating kittens is not possible since you have to use charged particles. It's all magnetic steering and acceleration. His very uninformed and dumb question to ask an expert is frankly bordering on the insulting. So I just wanted to thank Jim for writing in to correct us. It turns out it is not in fact possible to circulate a kitten through the Large Hadron Collider. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
You would think Brian Cox, who actually operates it, would have known that.
Yeah, it's weird that he didn't.
He mistook it for the Large Kitten Collider.
Right, that's what I was about to say. That
which is a whole other device.
Scientists aren't working on it.
Really got to get his
yeah,
facts.
The LKC, yeah.
Right.
It's a huge mistake to make.
Located beneath Qtopia.
That's going to be our first real T-shirt, the LKC, the Large Kitten Collider.
Can someone please make an animation that just shows that might look like? Because I'd pay good money for that.
Mike, I understand that you have compiled some science or fiction statistics for us.
Yes, I have.
Oh.
Jay.
Ooh.
Now, I would like to say, did you split them up into before Rebecca started recording the podcast at 2 a.m.?
Oh, please.
And after Rebecca started recording the podcast at 2 a.m.?
No.
I believe that has had a significant effect on my performance.
There was too little data for subgroup analysis, Rebecca, so we're just going to have to go with the meta-analysis.
That's right.
Of the whole year. Fine. So go ahead, Mike.
Go on.
So in 2009, the science or fiction stats are as follows. At the bottom is Jay.
What?
Yes.
That was good. You almost sounded surprised.
Jay, I mean, you can look at it half full glass, half empty glass. Jay answered 50% of the questions right.
I'm actually shocked because it felt like I got like everything wrong.
No, you got half. And then Evan got 56%. Rebecca got 64.3%. And
yeah.
Bob at the top is 76.5.
Wow, Bob. Ooh. 76.
Bob. Oh, and I got 100%.
Yeah, that's because you're playing with yourself.
Good job, Mike.
The
longest winning streak was Bob.
Batter getting one at bat in a baseball season.
The longest winning streak was Bob with 9 wins. You did that twice.
9.
In honor of the movie 9.
Yes.
Yep. Twice.
Twice.
9.
That's right, Bob. Twice.
Oh, that's 18.
The longest losing streak was Jay. With 4. He did that twice too. And the number of times that everybody lost was 7. The number of times where everybody won was 12. Yes. And I started counting. I didn't start counting until about July or August. But starting in July or August, the number of times Steve was called a bastard was 14.
Oh, awesome.
Just 14, right?
Just 14,
yeah. 13 by Bob.
Well,
thanks,
thank you,
Mike.
Compiling those, Mike.
Appreciate it, man.
But I'm pretty sure that it, you know, if you just take into account the first half of the year, I'm beating Bob.
I'm pretty sure.
I can do that right now. Let me see.
Really? On the fly?
Yeah.
Really? You can test Rebecca's claim that fast, can you?
That's okay. I just PayPal'd Mike $20.
Some science you got here, Mike.
I'll just Google it.
No, it's still Bob's. Bob at 75%. Rebecca
at 73%.
Am I closer? 73.
See?
Oh, very close, but 73. Still Bob is beating you.
Close, but no cigar.
I took a nosedive. It's 1 a.m, for God's sakes. How am I supposed to answer your crazy fiction science question?
And Jay's still sitting at 50.
I mean, what?
Oh. Hey, you chose to move to London. You chose your husband over the show,
I did not choose. No,
that is true,
I'd like to correct you on this point because it turns out free will is an illusion, Steve.
And so you didn't actually choose.
I did not choose. There's no me to choose.
The absence of free will is not incompatible with the notion of making choices.
It is actually.
No, it isn't
in this instance because
it serves your purposes.
Yes.
Okay.
Look, I would love to banter with you more, Steve, but it's 1 a.m. I'm really tired. Okay.
So, one other comment. Do not email us to tell us that this isn't the end of the decade.
Oh, God.
Because it is.
We don't want to hear it.
Or do and get it deleted.
I've already set up the filter in Gmail to just send it right to trash.
Right.
We choose to end the decade this year. So, that's it. Mm-hmm. And speaking of which, that brings us to the end of our year and decade in review.
Oh, this was fun.
It was a lot of fun.
We should do this every week.
We should do this every year.
A lot of fun.
We should do this every decade. We're looking forward to the SGU in 2010. We got Nexus 2010 coming up April 17th in New York. TAM 8, Dragon Con 2010. And then in November, we're off to Australia.
Very exciting.
Which we are looking forward to.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of things that are happening this year, next Friday, January 8th, Richard Wiseman will be in Boston. Boston Skeptics are hosting him at the Brattle Theater. You can buy tickets on the Brattle Theater's website, or you can find out all the information at bostonskeptics.com.
Thanks to everyone for listening over the last year. Thanks to everyone who gave us a donation. We had a nice flurry of donations in the last couple of weeks. I guess people are making their pre-tax year donations.
We are still accepting them.
We are still accepting
them. FYI.
But it helps keep the lights on and keeps the bandwidth going.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And thank you for the good ratings on iTunes. Those are always lovely.
And for the podcast award, we appreciate
it. Oh, yeah, we won a podcast award.
Oh, yes.
We are now an award-winning podcast for the first time.
Did we get like leg lamp or something for that?
A leg lamp.
We got a Laurel and a Hardy handshake. Yeah. Mm.
Hey, Steve, I'd like to thank you for working your ass off again this year.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
Yeah, you don't have to do that every year.
Well, once
Steve,
a year.
Lazy. You're a lazy bum and you don't do anything.
We got an email not too long ago where someone very explicitly was asking questions about how does Steve do it? How could he possibly get all that done? They think that there's some secret to it, and I always...
There's a quantum Steve from another dimension that jumped in
right.
and helped.
No, and not the stoner, right?
Well, you guys answered that a few years ago. Steve has a bunch of clones in the basement.
Mm. Chained up, yeah.
I mean, Steve works a lot and plays very little. That's what it boils down to.
Really? He's always on Warcraft.
He's working while he's on there. He's, it's hard work.
X-Nay on the Orcraft way.
Well, thanks to all of you guys for another year.
Thank you,
Steve. You guys put the hours in as
pleasure.
Well.
Well, thank you, Steve. It's been great.
And until next year and next decade, this is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is produced by the New England Skeptical Society in association with the James Randi Educational Foundation and SkeptChick.org. For more information on this and other episodes, please visit our website at www.theskepticsguide.org. For questions, suggestions, and other feedback, please use the Contact Us form on the website or send an email to info@theskepticsguide.org. If you enjoyed this episode, then please help us spread the word by voting for us on Dig or leaving us a review on iTunes. You can find links to these sites and others through our homepage. Theorem is produced by Kinetto and is used with permission.